Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Allison Galen. She's a Edgar Award-winning author, a best-selling author, and her latest novel is Never Look Back. It is available now from the good folks at William Morrow. This book takes us into the world of investigating basically a 40-year-old crime, and it involves families and stuff like that. Allison, the plot of this book is not a simple, straightforward one, and I don't want to give anything away, so can you kind of set up what you want people to know going in?
Absolutely. In my book, in the 1970s, there was a teenage couple that went on a murder spree, April Cooper and Gabriel Leroy. Presumably, they died in a fire after 13 days of killing people. 40 years later, a podcast producer whose family has been destroyed by these murders decides to sort of, you know, do a podcast on it called Closure, in which he is talking to the survivors of this murder spree. But in his investigation, he gets a tip from someone who says that April Cooper is not only still alive, but living in New York and the mother of another, you know, grown person. So he lets this person know, Robin Diamond, who's a film columnist, and it sets in motion a whole bunch of events that result in a lot of shocking things happening. How's that?
That seemed to capture it very well. You know, people in this area may recognize at least the very, very teensy, tiny part of the premise is something akin to the Charles Starkweather situation that happened nearby here in Nebraska back in the 1950s. Yes. So, and I know you didn't write a book about Starkweather, but as you read through, I'm sure, the historical record of that, what was it you were able to take out of it to extrapolate it into somewhat more modern times in the mid-70s?
Yes, well, it's interesting. I mean, the Starkweather murders were sort of an inspiration to me, and one of the things that interested me the most about it was, at the time, Carol Ann Fugate, who, you know, was his supposed partner in crime, was 14 years old, and he was 19. And if you read every account of it, it seems that she was abducted, you know, that she was kidnapped. He killed her family and then took her with him, but then she was tried and convicted as an accomplice to murder. So I was sort of thinking about this. I've read a lot of accounts, you know, from her family. She was released on good behavior. I really felt that it was, you know, that one of the horrors that I feel that she went through was not only witnessing all these murders, but being misunderstood when she was, you know, finally, you know, when they were captured by police. So I wanted to write something. My first thought was, what if this was something that happened to me, or what if this was my mother? So I decided to write a book about that. I brought it up to the 70s just because I wanted current events to be, you know, taking place in current times, and I wanted my main characters to be of a certain age. So setting it in the 70s sort of helped that way. You know, the sort of the wilds of the Inland Empire in Southern California in the 70s, where I didn't grow up there, but I grew up near there, you know, has a similarity to these open spaces of Nebraska and, you know, kind of that, I don't want to say like a Wild West feel, but there's a certain feel to, you know, the Starkweather murders that have been captured in things like the movie Badlands and the song by Bruce Springsteen, Nebraska, and everything. And the Inland Empire in Southern California in the 70s has a kind of a similar feel. So that's why I decided to set it there and in that time.
Where geographically is the Inland Empire?
It's it's east, very, very east. So it's like sort of, you know, it's the desert. It's if you know where Pasadena, where the Rose Bowl is, it's probably like, that's around where I grew up. It's probably an hour or two east of that. There are places like West Covina, and, you know, they're closer to Death Valley than to the ocean. That's basically what I would say.
A good chunk of the story is told through the eyes of April Cooper, and since you didn't want to go back too far in time and try to make her alive as far as her talking, you did it through letters, which I thought was a brilliant literary tool that you used. But as an adult writer, how do you go back and put your mindset into the mind of not only a 14-year-old girl, but a 14-year-old girl in this particular situation?
It's kind of difficult, but I've written teenage characters before, and the main rule to follow, I find, is to not try to write like a teenage character. A teenager is going to have a totally different set of experiences than a grown-up character is going to have. So that's sort of, you know, the way you try to approach it. In writing the letters from April, you know, during that time period, I mean, she's, you know, a few years older than me, but I was certainly alive in the 70s in Southern California. But some of my memories definitely proved faulty when I was writing this, so I had to keep trying to look up certain pop cultural references from the time, you know, everything from, wait, was Starsky and Hutch on the air then, to what would a girl who was a freshman in high school be writing a social studies paper about, to, you know, then she's in this traumatic situation. So I think it's just a matter of not trying to write down, but just trying to think about what experiences somebody would have had at that time and write from that point of view. And I'm really glad you liked the letters. I really enjoyed writing them, actually.
Quentin Garrison, the podcaster who really makes the story go, he's 20-something. He's got this podcast. He's got a personal connection to this story. Is that the best idea for a podcaster? I mean, these true crime podcasts are all the rage right now, but isn't there something a little bit dangerous about doing a podcast in Quentin's perspective from something so personal?
Yes, yes, absolutely. But the interesting thing about a lot of podcasts is that they are very personal. That's why I chose to make them a podcaster rather than a journalist. You don't have kind of the restraint of objectivity in a lot of these podcasts. I mean, if you look at something like Serial, Sarah Koenig had a definite point of view that she went into when she, you know, started, you know, investigating this crime. Or if you look at a podcast like S Town, Brian Reed was emotionally affected by meeting the person that this podcast is about, and it changed him. That's what kind of fascinates me a lot about podcasts. And so I thought this would be a good idea for somebody to do. Not a good idea safety wise at all. Not a good idea in terms of if you really are trying to get closure, which is kind of ironic that the podcast is called Closure, and here he is immersing himself in these murders that destroyed his family. I don't necessarily know if that's the best idea to give you closure.
I'm chatting with Allison Galen about her brand new novel, Never Look Back. It's available now from the good folks at William Morrow. Allison, the Quentin Garrison character, he's very complicated, and it seems like what also makes him go, and we learn a lot more, is conversations he has with his co-producer on the podcast. Can you explain that relationship? Because it seemed like it really made the novel go from his perspective as far as developing his character.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad. I liked that character. her name is Summer Hawkins, and she's Quentin's best friend. They went to college together. She had a little crush on him at the time. Of course, nothing much happened with it because he's a gay man, but they are best friends. There's a certain devotion that college best friends have for each other and a caring that I kind of wanted to capture in their relationship with each other. And they're both great journalists. You know, particularly Summer, because she doesn't quite have the emotional baggage that Quentin does when it comes to investigating this case. So just in terms of, you know, rounding out his character and giving as many problems as Quentin does have, I mean, he's definitely been damaged by these events of his past. He's very much loved in his present. His husband loves him very much, and Summer, his best friend, loves him very much as well. So, you know, sadly, if he were to focus on his life in the present, he would, you know, realize that he has a very good life, but he's sort of mired in the past. So Summer is sort of a character of the present, of his present world, sort of telling you what type of person that Quentin is now, and also helping, you know, to forward the action as far as the investigation of this crime goes.
we see also the whole idea of the relationship between parents and children, not just as kids and adults, but as both when they're adults. And not only with Quentin Garrison, but also with Robin Diamond, the New York City journalist, the film columnist. So do you think as you wrote this that some secrets should just be buried and you never really want to know everything about your parents?
Well, you never will know everything about your parents. I think that's what I was really trying to say in the book, is that your parents are, you know, obviously fallible human beings. And many of us think that we fully know our parents. And when we describe our parents, we describe them in a specific way. And it's very often, you know, tainted by the point of view of a child. It's either blaming them for everything or completely worshiping them and they're blameless. But parents have these moments of, you know, shame and grace and nobility and embarrassment and things that we will never know about in our lives because they will never tell us. You know, being a parent myself, I know that there are hopefully some things my daughter will never know about me. So I think that, there's something about being an adult child. A lot of the suspense books, a lot of psychological suspense, tends to be from a parent's point of view of a young child, you know, with a young child, and, you know, how, or an older child even, how they don't necessarily know everything that's going on in their mind, or maybe a spouse. But I haven't seen it explored that often in terms of adult children of parents. And I think if there's any sort of message to it, it's that you never will fully know them. Just sort of move on with your life, thank them for what they've given you, and realize that they are fallible human beings.
I got to ask, because I know you live in the area. We're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. Barney Hoskins had a fantastic book that came out a few years ago called Small Town Talk, and it really introduced me to the history of where you live. But what's going on up there this summer? People celebrating the anniversary? Does anybody really care, because the whole population has changed so much since then?
Well, actually, shockingly, it hasn't changed that much. If you go to the green in Woodstock, you'll see several people who look like they just kind of started hanging out there in 1969 and never left. So, and there are a lot of, there's still the tie-dye t-shirt stores and, you know, that kind of feel to it. It's a very arty town. There are some events planned for the 50th anniversary. I know there was going to be a concert in Watkins Glen, but I think that's been put off because of some snafus, unless it's held at the last minute, like the Woodstock concert itself. That would always be fun. But, we're getting a lot of visitors here already for the 50th anniversary, so it's a fun place.
Well, in a city with that type of history, it's got to be great for a novelist to just get character. I mean, you got to meet people from all walks of life there.
Yes, absolutely. You know, a lot of people moved up here from New York City, particularly after 9/11. But then there are people who have been here for generations. You know, and And there's been a bigger influx of people in recent years, sort of after the housing crisis, because homes are more affordable up here. So a lot of young people and families, but a lot of older people that have been here forever. It's really a culturally rich place.
All right. Well, this book is called Never Look Back. It's by Allison Galen. The book's available now wherever your books are sold, from the good folks at William Morrow. It's an absolute page-turner of a thriller, and I loved it. Allison, thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you. This has been a real pleasure.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.